भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
यम हम्यपृष्टे क्वनदङ्घ्रिशोभम् विक्रीडं कन्दुकविह्वला विव्रीडतीं कन्दुकविह्वलाक्षीम् विश्वास्वशून्यापथद् स्वाद्विमानाद् विलोक्य सम्मोह विमूढचेताः यं हम्यपृष्टे क्वनदङ्घ्रिशोभम् विक्रीरथिं कन्दुकविह्वलाक्षीम् विश्वास्वशून्यापथद् स्वाद्विमानाद् विलोक्य सम्मोह विमूढचेताः यं हम्यपृष्टे क्वनदङ्घ्रिशोभम् विक्रीदथिं कन्दुकविह्वलाक्षीम् विश्वास्वशून्यपठत् स्वाद्विमानाद् विलोक्य सम्मोह विमूढचेताः
Translation. I have heard that Vishvavasu, the great Gandharva, his mind stupefied with infatuation, fell from his airplane after seeing your daughter playing with a ball on the roof of the palace. For she was indeed beautiful with her tinkling angle bells and her eyes moving to and fro. Purport. It is understood that not only in the present moment, but in those days also, there were skyscrapers. Herein we find the word Hamyaprishte. Hamya means a very big palatial building. Svadvimanad means from his own airplane. It is suggested that private airplanes or helicopters were also current in those days. The Gandharva Vishvavasu, while flying in the sky, could see Devahuti playing a ball on the roof of the palace. Ball playing was also current, but aristocratic girls would not play in a public place. Ball playing and other such pleasures were not meant for ordinary women and girls. Only princesses like Devahuti could indulge in such sports. It is described here that she was seen from the flying airplane. This indicates that the palace was very high, otherwise how could one see her from an airplane? The vision was so distinct that the Gandharva Vishvavasu was bewildered by her beauty, and hearing the sound of her ankle bells, and being captivated by the sound and beauty, he fell down. Kardama Muni mentioned the incident as he had heard it. So after describing how her good, you know, her good qualities by her mood, now he's also describing then the activities that beauty is so great that even the great Gandharva king, then he was stupefied by this. His attention was very much caught. So Prabhupada's pointing out here, for that to happen when she was in a very great palace, then it had to be quite high, because otherwise how then in his airplane would they be able to see? So unless it's very, very high, you can't see detail. And not only that, the detail was so much that he could hear her ankle bells, see her, the restlessness of her eyes like this. So now someone like Vishvavasu means flying by. It's not that he was flying, then saw some girl playing on some roof somewhere, and then dips his airplane down to have a closer look. The Gandharvas don't have to bother with such things. The beautiful women of the universe, they live on their planet, so they don't need to do such things. If he wants to look at girls, he just has to go back to his place and walk around. He doesn't have to, you know, go in his airplane and take closer looks. So the point Prabhupada's making here is that means the palace was very, very high, extremely high. Otherwise, in his normal just flying over, then it was close enough that while he was flying by, then he noticed the girl there and her playing the ball and on this. So this establishes that these, you know, great skyscrapers and that were very common before. It's an interesting thing in the Vastu Shastra that it recommends that for each floor that you go up, then you reduce the height by 1/12 from the last floor. So that means if you want to go very, you know, you want to make many floors in the building, that means the ground floors have to be extremely high, because otherwise 1/12 it gets less, you know. Like you have a, if you want a 12-story building, right, then if the first floor is 12 feet high, the next floor will be 11 feet high, then it'll go down like this. So you can imagine that unless the ground floor is very high, then the top floor may be a little bit, the roof might be a little low. Right, so there. So thus, they had great. So though they mentioned, like let's say they had a 7-story palace or a 10-story palace, that's not like here, where a 10-story means it'll be 100 feet high or 110 feet high. This would be have to be much, much higher to keep the proportions properly. Plus, we also see that in India they would always keep very high roofs, because then you get proper light, you get proper movement of air. The place stays very cool because the hot air rises. So the higher the ceiling, then the higher the hot air, and then the cool air is on the bottom. So generally we see in palaces when we go in that much of the time, you know, they have an easily a 20-foot ceiling, 30-foot ceiling. So, and that's, they're only going to go up and maybe another floor, one floor, two floors nowadays, you see. So in those days they would go up much more, so we can imagine the ground floor would be, you know, so much greater than all this. So they were very big buildings. And then from his own airplane, then he had his own, you know, he could, he had his plane and he could fly that around. So these were special things that only the demigods and that can fly around in. It was a very unique thing that Upadichara Vasu, he was given a airplane, I think by Indra himself. It was made out of crystal, solid crystal. And so then he would fly around in that. So they gave him the ability that even though these things can only be operated by the demigods, he was able to, he was giving the blessings that he could run it. So much of the time he just spent flying in the air, looking around. He was given, not only could he fly around the earth, but the universe. He was given that benediction that he could go around and look everywhere in the universe and see, you know, what's going on just for interest's sake and like that. So therefore he's called Upadichara, chara means to leave, means, so he didn't leave the sky. He was always up. He was always flying around. It must be interesting, a crystal plane. You could see through it. People, you know, from the ground could see through. You could see a guy flying in the air, right? Just so then he had this. And then, so we can also understand from here is that it didn't appear that they had much problem with turbulence, so they didn't have to worry about seat belts, you know. And because of not having his seat belt on, then when he went by and he was looking at the girl, he just fell out of the airplane. So that's serious beauty. You can get a Gandharva to fall out of an airplane, it has to be pretty amazing. You don't hear of anyone falling out of the airplane for the other apsaras like that. Because the difference will be is the apsaras may have the same physical beauty, but they didn't have what was in the last verse, the actual purity. Because it's the purity that makes the attractiveness like that. So we can see is what he's talking about here, it's also in glorification, is that her beauty then is so attractive because of that good qualities. Also we see here is still he's mentioning that her beauty is there, but he hasn't at this point stated anything physical. Still, her movements, the sound of her ankle bells, the movements of her eyes, these have, so it's her activities. So before was the subtle body, now it is her fine activities that are attractive. So after this, he hasn't said anything. I don't even know if he will. No, he doesn't. He doesn't even mention something about her actual direct physical beauty. So these are the things that are creating the attractiveness, the proper mood. The proper thought mood then manifests through, means that the mood is actual proper, you can tell in the movements. Otherwise, many can for, you know, a moment, you know, show, you know, some innocence and this and that, but when they move, then you can tell it's not. You can tell that the actual mood by how they move. That's, you can see there. So here, it was so amazing that it stupefied Vishvavasu. So he's one of the major demigods. He's not a small timer. He's one of the great, great personalities. Another point here is that the aristocratic girls, they would, you know, they would play and do different things, but they would not do it in public. She's doing it on the roof of their house. Therefore, also the advantage of having flat roofs, because then you can use them, like, you know, like in this kind of winter season when it's the day is pleasant and the sun, then you can go on the roof, sit in the sun, but you can sit there without being in public. So you can sit there, they can play there, they could rest, you could eat, you could do so many things there. So that would be the reason that generally we find in India is that, except for in the mountains, then always the roofs generally are flat, because you can do so much on them.
Like this.
And then such sports, was it mentioned, is only for the you know, aristocratic girls, because the others then would be busy doing their household duties, these aristocratic girls, and they had assistants, they had maid servants and that, so they would be doing the duties. They wouldn't necessarily be doing them. Some duties they would do. Maid servants don't cook. That's one thing. Aristocratic families, doesn't matter how wealthy they are, the women of the house, they cook. The maidservants assist. They'll cut, they'll clean, they'll wash the pots, but they won't touch the fire. It's just considered uncultured if the maidservants cook. So they do plenty of service. When they're doing service to the husband, they'll do it, not the maidservants. Like this. So they have they know how to serve. They do all these things. But in general, then this would give them some more time. Therefore, we find they're playing ball. Like that. Well, the others, then they would be doing the duties themselves. Something must be done. The women must keep themselves busy. So then it's here. So here they're keeping themselves busy with sport, but not in public. You know. So he says this was the culture then. Yeah, any questions on this one? Real short class, but then, yeah.
We're in the process of making a youth club, which is nothing.
Uh-huh.
And Pallas and Barbara probably brought the point up of separation. It was still a bit unclear how, you know, this is like a practical example, a problem solving activity here, where we've got these kids that are basically growing up in the Western system, in the East, so turning to boys and girls to some extent. And we also want to attract other people to come to this youth group that come from that background. So how can we get this balance between separating the boys and girls, but at the same time making an environment that they can relate to from the outside?
What are the ages?
From 11 to about 18.
Just happened to pick the most dangerous age. Below 10 and above 18, basically, you're dealing with more reality. Means it depends. Certain things can always be done together. Where it doesn't require interaction, those can all be done together. You know, some classes, you're doing, you know, something. You know, eating or watching something, you're watching a video or these kind of things where they don't have to interact themselves. But when it's stuff where they have to interact themselves, then it's better to separate. Because the Western society is built to create interaction between men and women. That's what it's designed for. It's like you have a modern party, and the couples will go to the party. But are the couples generally standing together talking to the same person, or the man's off talking with the women at the party and the woman's off talking with the men at the party? Well, it's designed like that. It's like in aristocratic circles. They have a formal dinner. It's always designed that that the seating arrangement will be man, woman, man, woman, man, woman. It's just designed to create interaction. Because that's what's inspiring for for anyone, the non-devotees, but especially for those who don't follow the Vedic culture. This is their inspiration. Otherwise, then they don't have any religious principles that they're, you know, serious religious principles that they're working on. You know, just be a good person, be a good man, and, you know, that means that you can say it in a couple of, you know, maybe a minute or 30 seconds, and then you've said all your religious principles, you know, and then that's it. So, therefore, unless they're inspired by this interaction between men and women, they don't work, they don't act. The whole culture is dead. Everything's going on by this interaction. You know, you see, you go out, how do they sell anything? It doesn't matter what it is, you have to have a woman on the front. I once saw an ad when I was a kid. It was an ad for baked beans. Baked beans, right? It's a real high class, you know, hot cuisine kind of thing, right? And there was a half-naked woman holding the two cans of baked beans, you know, in a particular position on her body. So you understood she was naked, but she didn't reveal too much, you know. I don't know if it would be great fashion, but whatever it is, you know, it's just... You know, of course, this was in a magazine that was showing really bad advertisements, but the idea was is that somebody thought of it. And that baked beans, right? So then, just everything has to go by this. There has to be something to create that interaction. You know, all the whole idea is that by doing this, you'll attract the opposite sex, by eating this, by smoking this, by wearing this, by, you know, talking in this, whatever it is, that's all it's for. So seeing that, then one can understand maybe there's not very great merit in the Western system. You know, that's always the thing, you know, we're growing up in the environment. Where? On this farm, show me the karmis running around here. Show them to me. You know, they're coming in, they're influencing everything. And the TV, but who brought the TV? The karmis came in here one day with a truck full of TVs and said, you know, okay, you guys, if we don't see you watching these TVs, there's going to be trouble. You know, we're going to come back and we're going to check. Right? That's maybe, but, you know, the point is that we create our own environment. You go to a Lakshma, 1,000 devotees all living in the same area. Where are the karmis? You know, Mayapur, 700 devotees living in... Where are the karmis? But everywhere I go, they always say, well, we're growing up in the modern world and the modern situation. It's like, where is it? I don't see it. So we create our own environment. So that's the whole point. You create what you want. The karmis create an environment... what they are used to. So basically what devotees are saying is, my, you know, particular, you know, social and economic background that I grew up as a karmi is okay. And therefore, if my children stay within those confines, I won't say anything, because it's not so bad. I became a devotee. But if they go outside of that, then I'll freak out. I smoke pot, it's okay if my kids do. It's not so bad. You know, they have to learn, they got to grow up, they got to experiment themselves. But if I catch them shooting heroin, boy, I'm going to kill the kid. That's the whole point. You know? Oh, they say, you know, boys and girls hang around, it's all right, it's great like that, but if they get pregnant, okay, then we got a problem. So that's all it is. All that you're hearing is their conditioned nature. What is the limit of it? You're not hearing something different. Because if you go and let's say you go to those who are coming from, you know, more aristocratic families, their kids aren't out on the street. Their girls aren't wandering around just with any old guy. They're more careful. Like that. And you go to other religious groups, they create their own world. Everybody creates their own world. Right? You get in your car, you go from your house, you drive to some place where you're going to go to a place that you like that matches your world. You've driven past hundreds or thousands of places. But you've gone to that shop, that club, that bar, that person's house, this situation, that's your world. So we create our own world. It's not that we need to be, you know, which world, which one, you know? In other words, if we just buy into the pop culture, then what is that? That's pretty cheap. Aristocratic people don't buy into the pop culture. Like that. So it's just a matter of what we want to be. If we just want to be common, just ordinary, this and that, then fine. Then also it makes varnashram real easy. We don't have to worry about this Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya. We just have to just see that we're good Shudras, that's all. Pop culture means Shudras, that's all. That's what the pop culture is for. Like that. The Vaishyas create the pop culture, they make the money. They pay taxes to the Kshatriyas who allow them to do it because they get their taxes. And then the Brahmins, and they talk about, they create some ideology as how it's something very wonderful. So this is your pop culture. This is the modern culture. So what does that mean? One has to be convinced that our culture is good. And be able, if we're convinced, we can give it to others. The reason it's not going to the second generation is because the first generation is not convinced about it. They're not convinced. They don't follow it themselves, so how do they give it to their children? You know, the failure is not the Western culture, the failure is us. Prabhupada valued it. He went to America. He took, you know, the dirtiest, funkiest guys around and turned them into nice, clean... You have people, it's their philosophy. It's their vow to keep long hair. I mean, why are they calling them dirty hippies? Because they were dirty. Funky guys, long hair, beards, you know, funky old clothes. They don't wash them now and again. And it's their philosophy. It's their life. Prabhupada goes there. And then next thing is they're all shaved up and they're taking bath a few times a day. You know? And they're happy. Because why? Because Prabhupada valued it. We go into a place and nothing changes. Why? Because we don't value it. What you don't value, you cannot give. That's all. A teacher can't really give what he doesn't value. You know, you can teach something, they'll learn the knowledge, but the action that they will apply it in their life through the rest of their life is only if the teacher valued it and gave that value. Or if by their own determination, then they create the value. But otherwise, you see, you go to a class, you know, every class you learn English, but that class where the teacher really themselves appreciates the English language, then from that person, you gain an appreciation of the language. Otherwise, it's just one of those things you have to learn. Like that. So that's the whole point. If what we value, we give. What you don't value, you can't give. It's very, very simple. Very, very simple. So understanding that, then you look at what's our culture, what would be suitable, what's not. And then watch. It also a lot depends upon the innocence of them. If they're new, they're from new backgrounds like this, you know, the backgrounds they're from are pretty, you know, stable. Then they can, more things can be done together. Right? You can even put the, you know, adolescents together in so many things because, you know, it's new, it's Krishna conscious and all this, and they're having fun in that. That's the focus. But when they're coming from situations where they see the adults around them doing all kinds of crazy stuff, and this one's off of that one with this one, and this, then it's putting those kids together might not prove to be very well and good. They know too much. They've been spoiled. So they know these things. If they don't know, then you can for some time. And then gradually separate. You know? Because otherwise, if you're going to run it on the modern thing, how are you going to keep them interested? What are you doing of interest? You know? I mean, nowadays you take the adolescents and put them together in a room, what do? Talk for jalpa, snort cocaine, and have sex. Excuse me, drink beer also. So what, you got something along that line or something? You got something. Otherwise, it's not going to be very exciting. So therefore, what's interesting is the exotic difference. It's something totally different. There's religion. You're learning how to do that, how it applies. It has to be all explained. You have to explain it. Why they're doing it. Why it's important. Teach them who they are. You know? Like that. Then that's interesting. That becomes interesting. So this is general. I mean, you have to, you know, apply it. You know the kids. You know your situation. You know, like that. So I can't give any you know more detail. But it's just the considerations behind it. Like here, Kardama Muni wasn't looking at her and going, "Wow, what a babe!" Yeah. You know, it's like he's sitting there thinking. You know, he can see that her character is good, and that's backed up by her activities. Therefore, you know, therefore he considers that she is qualified. There hasn't been anything here mentioned that, you know, qualification, you know, means that she's physically beautiful. That's not been mentioned here. So that's the whole point, is that you have to see what you can do that will be good for their character or this or that. Otherwise, why bring them together? You know? Why be the catalyst for them getting into all kinds of strange activities? You know? Saying bringing together should be for upliftment. If bringing together means they're just going to get to know each other and pretty soon they stop coming to your program because now that they know each other, they go to make their own party. You know? You know what I'm saying? Oh, I see. So that means then your 1 hour a week is actually sustaining their whole social interaction. Is that what you're saying? Because the rest of the week they just sit around like zombies waiting for that 1 hour. You know what I'm saying? They're associating anyway with each other. So you can offer something different. You can show them how to associate. What is the direction? Understand? We're helping them come together, meet each other like that. But they're mainly going to work. They're going to meet each other outside of that if they like each other. If they don't, they won't. Devotees naturally will be together like that. I mean, it's always been, you know, since the 70s, you know. L.A. was like a, I don't know what you call it, just those rings. You had your, you know, 100 devotees, you know, in the front, you know, the four regs, Mangalarti, 16 rounds and that. And then the next was, you know, occasionally, and, you know, three regs, and then two regs, and one reg, like that. But they always associate with each other. So those who were the two reg walls always associate with two reg devotees. They didn't associate with karmas. If the kid has had any little exposure or anything in that, they consider the karmis stupid. They really consider them stupid. They don't know anything. It's not that they're not attracted to non-sensual activities, but they'd rather do it with people that are like them. Right? You know, rich people associate with rich, poor with poor, this one, you know, this one with this, that one with that. They stay in their own groups. And they all do the same thing. So that's the thing. Is that they may do whatever they're doing, but they do it amongst themselves. So it's not necessarily. Sometimes they get in, but then that means then there's really not been a taste for the culture. Otherwise, they couldn't be able to handle too much hand with the karmis. Because they're just too stupid. What do you talk about with them, you know? It's just nothing to talk about.
Could you elaborate a bit more on the, how that
They need to be respectful of each other. It means respect is the basic thing. If the respect is there, then you have to teach them that they're people. You know, they're not bodies. You know? The girl is not just a body, as we see here. Is that? They're a person. There's a person there that thinks and, you know, has desires and everything like that, has some ideas, and that has to be respected. And so you can't just see them just as a body. You have to see that there's a body, there's a subtle body, and there's a soul. So for us, especially seeing the angle from the soul. And then if that's there, then they can interact properly. But there's no need to talk much. Even in families where they're, like, let's say, you have a cousin, brother, and sister, the adults won't let them talk just on their own. For what reason? You know, when they're young, that's one thing. But once they hit 12, they don't talk anymore. You know, if their interaction, the family and that, and something comes up, get this, that, and that kind of stuff, that's fine. But to just sit down and just talk for no reason, it's not even allowed. And that's in the family. You know, that's in the family. So, you just have to learn to be properly, to respect. Like that. That's there. If that's there, then there's proper interaction. Why are there difficulty in marriages? It's no respect. You know? So that's the first thing. You have to respect. Like that. And then yourself understand is that you're dealing with Krishna's devotees, so they belong to Krishna. So then, to interact with them, you have to interact with them how Krishna would want us to interact. That's the point. How would Krishna interact? You know. So then, that has to be seen. You know, it's very proper. It's very, very formal, but pleasant, like that. Because otherwise, if it gets informal, then what does it go? Which direction does it go? If it goes informal, do the girls go into mother, and then these boys are like the son? Or they're older, so then they're like the father, older brother? It goes into formal, or it goes into sex? I mean, these are the two directions it can go. Mother, tigress. You know? Father and son, or husband. They don't really have any other options. I mean, so we're basically limited to 5 main rasas and 7 secondary rasas. So it's not that we have any other options. I haven't heard of the Western society creating some new rasas that we haven't heard about. Of course, they put changed the focus from, let's say, conjugal rasa to ghastliness or, you know, things like this. They're expert at shifting certain situations from your natural pleasant interaction to a really unpleasant interaction. Like that.
I have a question about sports. We read about and we hear a lot of research that it's very important for children as they're growing up to be active and to engage in physical activity, and teaches them, in sports and teaches them.
Well, that's what they say. I haven't seen it. In 20 years, I haven't seen it. It means if you have a teacher who he himself values teamwork, proper behavior, sportsmanship, and they're very firm and don't let the kids do any nonsense, in there, those group of kids learn teamwork. Otherwise, they won't learn teamwork. They're out there and somebody does something stupid and everybody gets on the case. Only little kids, they laugh at it. Otherwise, in my experience, in 20 years, somebody blows it with the ball and he may not be playing the next round. They won't let him play. You know? And when they win, then they get, you know, up there, yeah, like this. You know, that's it's not cultured. Like that. And then the other guys are, you know, stupid and, you know, put down. And then many times, you know, they curse and, you know, they try to get the ball. They can't get the ball, so they just kick the other guy in the shin so at least he can't have it. I haven't seen it in 20 years.
either the kids or when our adult Hare Krishnas come in and play with them. It gets worse. The adults are the worst. They're disgusting. When you get these, you know, paunchy 30, 40-year-old devotees out there and their fancy track shoes and their, you know, this and that, so they're just a gumption barefoot, you know, they take it so seriously. They won't even let the kids play because they're not good enough. And they swear and this and that. I remember in Mayapur, they banned the adults. And these are the parents of the kids, you know? The ones that, you know, how are you preparing your kids for the world, all this kind of... And they're out there and they're disgusting. How they behave. There's no sportsmanship, there's no teamwork. One or two guys know. So you have to, to create the teamwork means it has to specifically be done. Otherwise it won't happen on its own. If it's actually, you know, it's like any curriculum. It means unless you plan it, that this is going to get across, it won't get across. So the teacher has to be aware of it and plan it, then you can create the teamwork. I've heard that so many times to so many devotees, but I haven't seen it. Neither amongst the kids nor amongst the parents. Like that. You see it on the television because the guy gets $1,000,000. Like that. He gets $1,000,000. He'd love to take the ball down to the front himself, but he know he may not make it. And there are guys out there in the open field and he could make the goal. So therefore he kicks it over there. Because if he doesn't, he's on the bench. And if he's on the bench too much, he loses his job. That's why there's teamwork. You know? Now and again you find very close friends, this, that, they have some good fun, but it's friendship. So the teamwork in this world is only because it's profitable. You know, what is the meaning of the teamwork? In this material world, it's profit. It's profit, artha is this thing. That's the purpose. It means they're out there kicking the little ball around because they make money. And the guy who owns the team, he makes even more money. And the guy who owns the stadium, they make money. The guys who organize the, the league itself, you know, they make money. You know, all the guys who sell the popcorn, they're making money. You know, and the guy in the street, he loses money. Like that. You know? So that's the things. The teamwork is economics, actually. That's the platform. It's pranamoy, extended sense gratification. That's where teamwork is the platform of it. Selfishness, sensuality is self-centered. So that's bad. So they kick them up into the team and this and that, the spirit. But it's not religious, so it's sub-religious. So it's on the platform of economics, justice, and those kinds. Because that's what you see, is that they work together, they get the result. And somebody didn't do the right thing, it's unjust. He gets his red card, his yellow card, his whatever card he gets. Because it's injustice. So that's the platform they're moving on. But when you get into religion, that's where you actually get deep teamwork. That's actually a platform of teamwork. The real way to create teamwork in a human being is through that. Otherwise, teamwork can be done. Dogs also, they'll teamwork. They got a pack of dogs and a fox, and they work, you know. Or a tiger, like that, you know. A couple of them come up from this side, then they come from that side, and, you know, they just, it's teamwork. But what's the purpose? Dinner. You know? That's the purpose. So, but in religion, that's where you really have to be conscious of teamwork. Who the other person is, who you are, what is your duty towards them. So you don't step beyond that boundary. You won't go beyond that. It means, here, this is a woman, I'm supposed to deal like this. I don't go beyond that. I don't say the wrong thing. I don't act in the wrong way. I don't stand in the wrong way. I'm not, in, you know, like that. That's teamwork. And then they see their duties, they do. Children, the parents, the child is the center. There's teamwork in taking care of the child. The community in taking care of all the children of the community. Like that, teamwork, you know, then so that's on that kind of thing. Then you get up on the higher, is for knowledge, discussion, you know, guhya makati prichati, like this, trying to find out, hearing, like this, and then on the transcendental platform, then serving Krishna, Krishna's the center, everyone working together to serve Krishna, like that. So that's the real teamwork. So the other, it can be there if you can get it across, but it has to be trained. It won't just happen automatically. I mean, if you want to know what kids are like on their own, There's a nice book about that. It's called Lord of the Flies. That's kids in their pure state, untrained. They'll kill each other because they don't understand the realities of this world. So they deal with each other and deal in so many ways, make politics, but they don't know the results, so it comes out worse than what they expected. So if you want to create it on the Pranamoy platform, then it has to be planned. Then you can get something out of it. Like that. But the physical activity is good. Swimming is good. Wrestling is good. Prabhupada's recommended those. Like that. Swimming, wrestling. Because then they come in contact with the earth. Like that. It balances the... there's too much like the passion or masculine nature by wrestling on the ground, because the ground is earth, is mother, then it balances that. Like that. You see that it's done a lot with the Buddhists, the Zen Buddhists, they do that gardening, touching the earth and all these things, wrestling. So they do all those things because then it keeps, you know, their yin and yang, you know, more balanced. So then it means there's many things you could do. It means whatever you choose that you see, you know, that they don't get out of hand, you use like that. But if you want to create teamwork, that you have to preach about like that. But then that's just the first stage, is because they may not be very conscious, may not, so they like to play. So in play, then you can teach them to be conscious of others and be, you know, properly behaved and respectful and all those things. Then as their consciousness is awoken, that they can see finer points, then you take them into a religion. That's the point. Kids will just make their own games and play. That's the thing. You don't need an organized sport. If kids on their own, they just play. They'll make it up themselves. That's the thing. And generally it's simpler, and it uses in one sense more brain, because they bring it out, they envision things, you know. Little kids, they go over and find two long stones, right, and they set them up against the tree, you know, it's Gorni Thai, you know. So in their mind, this whole temple, all the play, everything's happening. Well, if you get out there and, you know, kick around a football, it doesn't necessarily create any, the mind doesn't become active. You know, your response to something is good. You know, but if you really want to develop that, then, you know, I've heard one of the best things is get a 10-by-10-foot room, put a chicken inside and tell them to catch it. That really develops, you know, your response, you know. Thank God. So it depends what you want out of it. What do you want from them doing the sports? Because otherwise, the kids on their own, they'll just make up their own stuff and do and play. You know, if they're little kids. If they're bigger kids, that's another thing. But then, you know, they could be taught, you know, you have to just see what works. A very nice thing is, if you can get it, is jiu-jitsu. Because it's wrestling. Because generally you find they're not into just regular old, you know, college wrestling. Because it's, what do you do with it? You know, it's a little too formal and all that. But if you get into jiu-jitsu, then it's wrestling, it's a martial art. And that they really like. So they're doing the physical activity, they're using their brain, they have to make tactics, they have to be aware of their body, you know, there's so many things that are there. Plus then in that environment you can create an atmosphere of discipline, because that's always the atmosphere of the martial art. Discipline, respect, you know, proper behavior, it's all there. And plus, at the end of the day, you have something useful, unless, of course, they're going to grow up to be professional footies or something, you know, then it's okay. But otherwise, it's something that they can use. So you just have to see what works, but understand you have to take them through all the levels of consciousness. You know, so it's like Prabhupada mentioned in here, Transcendental Adventures. We have all these. We can teach politics, we can teach art, we can teach, you know, music, we can teach anything as a medium to get to Krishna. So if you can use your sports to get through, then that's okay. You know, like that. But whoever does your sports then has to have a character that you want the children to have. Because, believe it or not, the sports teacher will have more influence on the character of the children than the academic teacher. Because they're subconsciously part of the kids' world. The kids are playing, and whoever's sitting there they're the ones that have the influence. Even if they don't even take part, because they're conscious of them constantly. There's no adults there, kids will play in one way, and adults are there to play in a slightly different way. So they're subconsciously conscious. So whoever you want to have that influence, they should be doing that. And then the academic teachers, if they make that endeavor, they can have that influence also. But just naturally on their own, they won't have as much as the sports teachers. Sports teachers, your shop teachers, your anything practical. They'll have more influence. Like that. You know, so it's like it means you have to bring in a karmi to teach this thing, then better have a devotee go out and learn it and have them teach you. Like that kind of thing. Is that
okay? Maharaj, could you comment on this very system of getting the girls married at a young age before puberty? I mean,
what kind of? What kind of?
Chita was married at the age of 9.
So yeah. Rukmini would have been 12. Most of them will be around that age. I mean, what kind of comment do you want?
Because at age,
I mean, it's just that, but the principles are the same. But still, the idea is that they are trained and all that. So, but if you're going to have them get married older and have them, I mean, what's the purpose of them getting married older? Generally, it's what? Education. Okay, now how are they going to focus on their education if they're thinking of boys? Right? So if the actual purpose of not them getting married when they're young, so they can get educated, then that means you have to put them in an environment which they won't be distracted by the pop culture. So if you can do that, so that would mean, okay, stick your daughter in a, you know, a girls' boarding school. Still there'll be distraction, but it, not in the classroom. You know, or, you know, some way that they're not going to, they don't have to, you know, how you say, you know, feel the importance of being anorexic to be, you know, progressive in their school. You understand? That's the main thing. If that's the purpose, and then the 20 they get married, but then what are they going to do? Has the 20-year-old ever, you know, touched a baby? You know what I'm saying? So therefore, suddenly now she's 20, she gets married, she has a baby. She doesn't know what a baby is from, you know, anything. She's probably touched, you know, touched frogs more than she's touched babies, right? Because in biology class, you got to deal with a frog. You know what I'm saying? So they just don't know, you know. You know, it's like they probably, you know, there's every chance that when they put their first pot of water on the fire, they'll burn it. You know. You know what I'm saying? It's just, so the whole thing is if the whole idea is you want her to be successful in a married life, at the same time as you want her to be educated and sophisticated and like that, then that's fine. But you have to see that those other things are also going on. You know? But you have to be very, very careful that the mother is not, vicariously enjoying the Western culture through her daughter. Very important. You understand? So therefore, she thinks, you know, yeah, I got to do all this stuff, so therefore you shouldn't, you know, you should be independent and this and that. And yeah, and then what does that mean? You know, let them dress however they want, this, that, no. Many times I've seen, you know, otherwise, where does little girls have the idea that they should dress in some stupid stuff? The mother picks it out for them. They pick out that, you know, you have the 8-year-olds in the skin-tight, you know, nylon, you know, slick, you know, whatever it is, you know, pants or funny little shorts and t-shirts. The mother picks it out for her. The 8-year-old, what does she know about it? You know, they'll wear anything. You know what I'm saying? So you have to see that the mother is not bewildered by it. Otherwise, your values, the discipline of the daughter is coming through the mother. If the mother is bought into the modern thing, then, you know, there's no chance. So, like that. If that's what you want, then get it. But it won't happen automatically. If you don't plan it, it won't happen. Right? You understand? Lunch didn't happen by chance. right? The kitchen's full of all kinds of stuff, and you know, just by chance, you know, maybe all the stuff would just get together and turn into something edible, right? You know, right? You didn't learn, you know, stick 1 million monkeys in front of 1 million typewriters and let them poke away, and then if you check very carefully, one of them will have written, you know, some Shakespeare, right? That's the theory, right? There's still 2,000. It's a good one, you know, along with the one hand clapping and, you know, what happens. Yeah, that's it. And then if the tree falls in the forest and no one's around, it doesn't make any sound like that. I think how many angels dance on the head of the pin is old fashioned, so that when they move on. So you have to see it's practical. It's not sentence. Sentiment's not enough. You have to actually do it. You know? Unless you want, you know, your daughter to be wild and crazy and, you know, go through, you know, 3-4 marriages and, you know, have about 5 different colored grandchildren, you know, I mean, it's fine. That's what you want. Great. Then you don't have to do nothing. You just have to sit back and enjoy. Playing on the roof, yes. Ankle bells, yeah. Ankle bells. At least on the girls, they're very nice on the mind. Because they make fine sounds. Girls, it's very good. The more they're in a fine atmosphere, then the finer they become. You know? So then the ankle bells create fine, nice sound. It's fine, because they're made out of silver, so they make a very, very sweet sound, like that. You know, so they're very good for making the girls' minds peaceful, but making the men's minds not so peaceful. That's the downside of them. Like that. So that's the... In other words, it just catches the senses. For the women, it engages the senses. See, because the women, their field, is because it's the mind, then includes the senses. So sensuality is their field. Sexuality is a different thing. Sensuality. So the fineness of the senses being engaged, the fine cloth, the fine sounds, the fine smells, the fine speech, the fine everything like that. Then it's very nice for them. But the men, unfortunately, become bewildered by it. Yeah. That's the thing. So unless the man is trained in properly, then they become too bewildered by it. But because if they're not trained in sense control, then you can't have refinement. See, in the Vedic culture, without sense control, you can't have refinement. Well, in the modern culture, you also have to have sense control, but that can have a burning, you know, demoniac, materialistic, sensual goal to it. You know? You want to move with those girls, therefore then you behave in a better way. You know? So, like that, then it's economics that you're doing better. The other one's not, it's religion. So the one is the relationships based on economics. The other one is based on religious principles. Therefore, they're sense-controlled in that, not because they want to impress the women, because that's human life. That's what God wants us to be. Then, it's useful in dealing in that way, that they can move in that fine atmosphere of the women and not become bewildered. But if they're not sense-controlled, they'll be bewildered. Then everything just gets reduced.
Right? Can you say something about how much time husbands and wives should spend together? And is it different at different stages of the marriage?
It just means how much time needs to be. When they have service, particular things, they're together, then they're together. You know? And it depends. If they're your day-to-day activities, it may be less. When they don't have, it may be more. You know, you come to the temple or you go traveling, it may be more. But together means you're engaged basically in the same purpose. It doesn't have to be exactly the same. Like let's say there's a family outing. The family goes to the temple, right? So when they get to the temple, then it's very natural to see the women will go off, you know, go to the kitchen or go where the other ladies, the kids go where the kids are, the husband goes where the other men, you know, of his, you know, nature are. And then they're there for hours. And then afterwards they all get back in the car, and wasn't it great being at the temple? And they all had a good time that they did something together. But they weren't practically, they bump into each other now and again and smile and say something, but that was it. So the time actually spent together at the temple may have been a very short time, 10, 15 minutes, like that, though they were there for hours, but they felt they did something together. So together, you have to see what that defines. It means the husband's, you know, doing the activities he needs to do in the house, you know, the wife's doing hers, she's cooking, he's out mowing the lawn. Because the purpose is the house, then they're doing something together, you know? So that's the thing, is how close do you get? You know, it's just like someone's cooking and the other one's washing pots. They're doing something together, you know? Unless it has to be that he has to stand behind her and she puts her hand on the spoon and he reaches around and holds the spoon, and like that kind of a thing. You know, I mean, it looks good in the movies, but it doesn't work like that, you know?
I'm thinking of a few examples. One example is, I know one family, Indian family, and 1 month in the year, the tradition that the woman would go back to her family. Mm. It's been a month here so that the man can learn to appreciate what she's doing for her and things like that.
That aspect is there. I mean, that will be on the women's side, and on the men's side, it's that they'll appreciate also the men, and also they get some space. I mean, so it's good for everybody. No,
at the same time, I've heard some others say that when someone first gets married, it's good to spend quite a bit of time together, kind of get to know each other, and that way you can get over the honeymoon quicker.
You don't have to worry about it. It's not something you have to. It's going to go away anyway. You work at it. Maybe you can get to keep it for 6 months. You work at it 6 months. The women say when the wife gets pregnant, honeymoon's over. That's it. This is what the women say. Like that, they change. So the whole point is what is the point? I mean, you want to get over the honeymoon. Why? Because it's very intense. But the whole point is then that means they're not really understanding or engaging their time connected to Krishna. It's not based on religious principles. It's not based on religious principles. Because if honeymoon's over and then you start looking at other women or other men, then what was the use? People go into marriage thinking it's going to be wonderful. So unless they can engage those wonderful moments in Krishna's service and seeing it according to religious principles, then they're not going to understand that what it's for, what it is, you know. And they're not going to see that, you know, it's the modes of nature. You know what I'm saying? I'll give an example. When, you know, when we were brahmacharis, then we would, you know, you take breakfast, right? You pack in how much you can get, you know, until it runs out, right? Then you go and you pack your bags, and then you get in the sankirtan van and, you know, try to chant your rounds and read and sleep all at the same time. And they give you a packed lunch, right? Then they give you your book box, and then they drop you off wherever you're going to do book distribution. So then you go to find a place to, you know, hide your book box, and then you got this lunch, right? And then you're thinking, well, now I'll go out and then I'll have to come back and this and that, so probably it'd be better if I eat the lunch now and get it out of the way. Right? So now, is that eating the lunch to get it out of the way based on, religious principles or on self-control? Or what's it based on? You understand? So trying to get over the honeymoon means because we're totally infatuated by the honeymoon. That's the point. So if we're self-controlled, whatever it is, that's there. That's not the purpose. We have duties to do. We're not elated in happiness or disturbed in distress. So when it says not elated in happiness, means we're going to be happy. But we don't take it beyond that. You know, it's not like, wow, this is great, fabulous. And that, no, it's just like, you know, this is nice. And so, but you have to see it in relationship to Krishna. Understand? So that's the point. So there's no need to try to rush getting it. It'll go away anyway. You know, that'll last longer than a week. You're doing pretty good.
But if you look at it from the point of view of duty, then for example, if someone just gets married, and that's the time to start establishing the marriage, and the husband goes away for 6 months or something, and then the wife is freaking out because the husband's not there.
But what's that got to do with the thing?
The marriage.
I'm saying, what does that have to do with the marriage? What's the...
Well, I'm saying that when somebody gets married, they have a duty to each other.
Yeah, but
so shouldn't they stick together and, you know,
no, but it means that you're talking apples and oranges. What is the duty? If the guy is a traveling salesman, she's married a traveling salesman. So when he's there, they're going to be together. You know what I'm saying? Like that. If that's the way it is, that's the way it is. But if it's something else, then they're not going to artificially not spend time together. But they shouldn't artificially spend time together. Right? It's just like a candle. Is it best used to light it at one end when it's dark, or light it at both ends and leave it on 24 hours? You understand? Even you're together, how are you going to know? It's not by experience that you actually understand who the other person is. Otherwise, it'll be the same thing. You get to know each other. What are you getting to know? Really, unless they spend time discussing and going through things of value and that. But how much can you do? You have to actually do something. You want to run a house, but it has to be maintained. It has to, you have to have money.
The point is that when you first get married, it's foundation time. And if one person's on another continent...
Actually, that's another thing. If you have a particular point you want to make, that's one thing. But most people are not on another continent. Why would they be on another continent? And the foundation is established before marriage. There's no foundation before marriage, there is no marriage. The boy, if a girl hasn't been trained in chastity, the boy in brahmacharya, you don't have a marriage. That's the foundation. So then they're together naturally. And not, they'll naturally do that. I'm just saying, why would he be out gone somewhere, he's in another continent? I'm just saying is, you know what I'm saying? We're talking general, but you're giving a specific... thing. I'm saying, why, what is it considered? I mean, is there a rule? I don't know. Maybe I'm making a mistake. Maybe there's a rule here, the new Varshana, as soon as people get married, then they send their husband to Australia. Is that how it works? You know? Is that... like that. It means they go out and... yeah, okay.
It seems like a marriage, in other words, is done before the marriage. So if the wife knows that she's going to marry Santa
Claus
travels for 3 months of the year, then she knows what she's marrying.
Yeah, there's no
but
problem.
If that's the situation she wants to get into, she's happy with that.
Yeah.
But if that's not arranged, then she marries someone who's traveling for 6 months. Then
okay.
Then you've got the nightmare because the woman's thinking.
Okay.
Right. So in other words, the marriage starts before the marriage.
It's a foundation.
Yeah,
but then that's something else. You know what I'm saying? The question is then how to see that it works, because it'll always be different. Everybody has different nature, different occupations. A man who his occupation is sankirtan, then either generally, will be, well, it could be any of one of them. He could be brahminical, that's why he's doing it, or the kshatriyas, this is how we're going to conquer the world. The vaishyas, this is how he's going to make his money. Because it's business, or a shooter because he's a good salesman. So then if he's married to a woman who matches that, then I appreciate. So then there's no problem. But it's like he says, it has to be known before. That was the whole thing in marriages before, is you knew the families you were getting married into. You knew their traditions, you knew their value systems. And that has to be worked out. And then there's no problem. Main thing is that if it's 3 months he's out, then as long as 9 months he's there. But if that changes, then there's a problem. It means you have to, before something happens, you have to be prepared for it. You know it's going to happen, and then when it does happen, you're ready for it. It's just like on plants. They've noticed, they hook the plants up to things and watch how they react. When the guy says, okay, let's cut this plant, the plant freaks out. But when they cut the plant, it doesn't bother the plant at all. Because it already knows it's going to happen. It's just a freak out when it first hears about it. But once it happens, it doesn't bother us. So that's the thing, is as long as you know before what's going to happen, and you know all it's been worked out why it's supposed to be, then things are fine. You know, kid's been at home all the time like this and that, and now he's going to go to school. You know, so as long as he's prepared for it, knows that he's going to learn, it's good for you, the discipline, you know, all these different things, then it's okay. You know, they may be a little wary because they don't know, it's the unknown, but at the same time is they're open for it because it's there. Like that. So if it's known, it's okay. Like that. Because otherwise, spending time together, how are they going to spend time together? What's their definition of spending time together? You know what I'm saying? Based on what? What will be the principles on which they're basing it? What will be the activities that they'll base it? You know, they play ping pong, or you know, what do they do? You know what I'm saying? Just what is it? So therefore, it's going to be household duties. You know, and then in between the duties, then they have time together. But it's not that they sit 24 hours a day together. I mean, what are they going to do? It's nothing to do. The sun only goes down for like half an hour, and then what do you do? You know what I'm saying? You get cramps if you sit on the bench all day. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So like that, you have to have something that is interactive, that's based around the house, based around the marriage, that is useful. Okay. So Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Prabhupada 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 ki,